Blog Talk Radio.
In Dallas, Texas, on Friday, February the 23rd. Welcome to our Friday show. And of course, this has been a week we have been focusing a great deal this week on the activities regarding the school shooting down in South Florida. In fact, we've posted several articles this week at American Thinker about this, and we'll be getting into it in just a second. I have one today talking about what I believe was a huge mistake by CNN the other night, and basically turning their town hall into an anti-NRA campaign rally. Basically, that's what that was. But let me begin with something else that happened today, and that's President Trump speaking at CPAC. CPAC, of course, for those of you who may not be familiar with it, it's a conservative convention. It's a convention where conservatives from all over the country gather in Washington, and they basically have a meeting, and they talk about different objectives. It's also a place where when, for example, Donald Trump himself made a big mark here at CPAC a few years ago before he was a candidate. Right here is where several candidacies have actually been launched, you know, like Ted Cruz had a big successful speech. So it's a convention like any other convention where you have a variety of speakers. Some of them are famous conservatives. Some of them are radio talk people like Laura Ingraham. Rush Limbaugh was there one year and all of that. So it's obviously a very political place. And the best thing about CPAC is that it's full of young people. So if you want to look ahead to the future, just look at CPAC, because there's a lot of good young conservatives there who are very committed to the conservative cause. So obviously President Trump spoke today, Vice President Pence spoke yesterday, and you know, President Trump gave them what they wanted to hear. But they gave them what they wanted to hear, which is a tough conservative speech. I caught most of it, and I thought it was a great speech. Now you could say it was too much like a campaign speech. Well, yeah, that's exactly right. That's what it is, really. It's a campaign speech. President Trump spent quite a bit of time in the speech talking about, you know, 2018. Well, that's very important because 2018 is just right around the corner, meaning the elections of 2018 are around the corner. And as you know, historically, the party in power tends to lose in the first year. And that's because often there's not the same intensity, if you will, to get out to vote. So obviously President Trump was talking about that. He also spoke about the gun control issue as it relates to school choice and all of that. He also made some very interesting announcement about North Korea and some sanctions on North Korea. So I thought overall it was a pretty good speech, actually. It was one that went over well with the crowd. Now, sometimes, they go on a bit too long. I think this one was about an hour and a half. What happens with President Trump is that when he gets into that environment, when he gets into that campaign mode, he just goes off script and he just talks and he just tells it like it is. And I think sometimes that's dangerous, honestly, because you might find yourself saying some things that you'll regret later. Usually presidents, when they speak, you know, they want to stay to the script as much as possible. But, you know, President Trump has a style, and whether you like him or hate him, he's got a style. And that's his style. You might as well get used to it. That's just the way he is. He doesn't follow the script real well. He likes to be his own man, and that's fine. I mean, that's okay. I mean, that's just the way he is. And you have to learn to like that style of President Trump. But I thought overall, the people at CPAC got exactly what they wanted to hear, which is a tough conservative speech. And that's exactly what they got. Now, one of the things, of course, that Mr. Trump mentioned at CPAC, and we're going to get into it right now, is this whole idea of gun-free zones. I have a post coming out Saturday regarding that, where I think it's time for us to drop these gun-free zones in our schools. What we have right now, it's interesting when you hear the reaction from people. They say, well, no, you know, guns and kids don't mix and guns and teachers don't mix. Well, we're beyond that point. You know, we're beyond that point. We're now at a moment in time where a gun-free zone in our schools is nothing but an open door for somebody to come in and start shooting. And that's what we've seen now way too many times. We saw it, obviously, beginning with Columbine. That was the shocker. Nobody expected that. And then, of course, Sandy Hook, which is, I think, even to this day, it's totally incomprehensible, because those were generally little kids, you know, 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds. I mean, it was just absolutely brutal. And then you had Virginia Tech in 2007 at a university. And now you have this this incident in South Florida, and all of them are gun-free zones, meaning where people can walk in with a gun and shoot at will. And you just have to stop that. Now, how you do it, of course, is what we're having a debate right now. I believe that we should stop it by putting guards at the doors and basically protecting the school with guards. They don't have to be people with machine guns looking out the window, but they can simply be guards, located in different places, who can obviously address the question of security based on the size of the school and all of that. There's a second debate that is also going on, a second conversation that is also going on, and that is, what do you do with teachers? Now, here in Texas, we have something called conceal and carry, which is basically a law in Texas that allows a citizen to carry a concealed weapon. So you might see a lady with a purse, well, she may have a gun inside. You might see a gentleman with a suit, well, he may have a gun on the side. And that's something that we allow in Texas. So my suggestion is, I'm going to guess that some of those people who have those permits are probably teachers. So why not offer those teachers an opportunity to carry their weapon, their concealed weapon, in schools? And that simply adds to whatever security horizon you're trying to cover on top of the guards. So I think a combination of these two things, where you put guards and then you allow some teachers to carry guns. We're not talking about every teacher in the school carrying a gun. We're talking about a selected group of teachers who, again, have been trained and prepared for these moments. And I think that's fine. That's acceptable to me. The bottom line is that we have to stop gun-free zones. Gun-free zones have been a disaster for our schools. And I don't know how many more of these incidents we have to witness before we come to that conclusion. People say, well, we should take guns away from people. Or, I mean, we shouldn't, you know, people with mental problems shouldn't have guns. Or we should pass a new law or whatever. The bottom line is that sometimes, as we've seen in South Texas, as we saw in South Florida, background checks don't always work. People are going to get guns if they really want them. So the best way to defend ourselves, when it comes down to the very last point, the best defense against somebody who wants to walk into a school and shoot people is to have a guard or somebody at that school who can at least shoot back and disable the killer, or perhaps kill him, or at least buy some time for the police to get there. But we can no longer continue to expose our kids, our students, to this kind of insanity, where people are walking right into a school with a machine gun and just sitting there, or whatever the gun is, and just sitting there and shooting people. That's simply unacceptable. That is a risk that I don't think we can afford to take any longer. We have to cut this out and protect these kids from this kind of insane behavior by people with guns who want to go in and kill them. Let me tell you, before we continue, let me tell you about my good friend Carlos Guedes. I'm sure for over time you've heard his music on our show. We use the music for the intro and for some of the bridges, as well as the different musical moments during the show. I have a link to his Facebook page on the show information, and if you click on that, It'll take you to his schedule, and you'll have an opportunity to see where he's at around Dallas. Carlos has been playing pretty much everywhere around Dallas lately. He is basically the background music. When you're having dinner, when you're having lunch or something, he's that man back there with the harp and the background music. It makes it for a very romantic evening, as everybody knows. And if you want to find out where he's playing, just go to his Facebook page, go to that link, and it'll take you to his schedule, and you're going to enjoy his music as much as you do. I mentioned that I have a post over at the American Thinker this morning where I talk about what we saw the other night at CNN, where CNN promoted something of a town hall about this situation down in South Florida, but it ended up being nothing but a campaign rally against the Republican Party and, of course, the NRA. And you had a crowd that was completely out of control. You had questions that were completely improper. And so it ended up being what it was, which is a campaign rally against the NRA. I write in my post today that this is going to backfire big time for the Democrats or the people behind this thing. And it's going to backfire because everybody saw what that was all about. That was not a town hall. That was simply a campaign rally against the NRA. And, you know, Rush Limbaugh has talked a couple of times about the Wellstone funeral, or the Wellstone memorial back in 2002. Maybe some of you don't remember that. But back then there was a funeral to honor the life of Senator Wellstone, who had been killed in a plane crash. And it turned into a campaign rally, into a disgraceful campaign rally against Republicans. And the Democrats paid a heavy price for that because everybody saw what was going on in that party. And I think this is going to hurt them a great deal. And where it's going to hurt them is exactly where they need to pick up seats, which is in the rural areas of the country where the NRA has a lot of credibility and where people see gun control differently than they do in some of the city areas. So I thought it was a big mistake on the part of CNN. Somebody should have thought that through, that if you put such a one-sided event, it's going to eventually backfire. So check out my post today over at the American Thinker about that. A couple of interesting things on this day in history that I want to close with. On this day in 1861, President-elect Lincoln landed or got to one, not landed. He took a train, I should say, to Washington, D.C. The train actually went to Baltimore, and then he got to Washington, D.C. after that. And part of the reason was that there was an assassination. The Secret Service, or the people protecting President-elect Lincoln at the time, I'm not sure it was called the Secret Service, but the people protecting him got wind of the assassination attempt. So they carefully moved him from Baltimore to Washington, D.C. Of course, he became president on the 4th of March, or a couple of weeks later. But this was, if you've ever read any of the Lincoln books, this was a pretty scary moment for the president-elect, because at this time in 1861, you know, the country was about to explode into the Civil War. And this was a very scary time, and especially for the president-elect and his family as they were arriving to take his new position. On this day in 1945, one of the most memorable photos of 1945, the Marines putting the flag up on Mount Suribashi. I think that's how you pronounce it, Suribashi, at Iwo Jima. Of course, the Battle of Iwo Jima, one of the most brutal battles of World War II, but one of the most consequential battles. And it took weeks to conquer that island. They had to go through horrific battles to win, but they did eventually. Once it was all done, the Marines went up to the top of the mountain and they raised the American flag. And of course, someone took that picture. I don't remember who it was, but somebody took that picture, and it became, of course, one of the prominent photos of World War II, the Marines putting up the American flag at Iwo Jima. Of course, the war was not over. There was a lot more coming, but at least this battle of Iwo Jima was over. One of the most brutal battles of World War II, the Battle of Iwo Jima. Man, if you ever want to read about it, it is devastating, the losses that the Marines took at Iwo Jima. Well, thank you for listening, folks. Thank you very much. Have a great weekend. Hope you have a good time. We're getting a little bit of rain, a little bit of chilly weather here in Dallas, Texas. But other than that, we're doing just great. Have a wonderful day, everybody. This is Silvio Conte.